What if owning a home wasn't this huge, lifelong financial challenge? Imagine it being, well, more like getting a high-quality product that's actually affordable and available.
That's definitely the dream driving a lot of innovation in housing right now, isn't it?
It really is. And today on the Deep Dive, we're going to zero in on two companies trying to tackle this, but in very different ways: Boxable and Anchored Tiny Homes.
Yeah, our mission here is to sort of cut through the hype, the marketing buzz. We've looked at, you know, firsthand accounts, some investigations,
right,
to give you a clearer picture of what's promised versus what's actually happening and maybe what you should be aware of if you're interested in these new housing models.
Okay, let's start with Boxable. Their whole house in a box idea, specifically the Casita model.
Mm-hmm.
So picture this. It's a small house, maybe around 400 square feet. But it comes with everything: plumbing, electric, kitchen, bath, and it's engineered to literally fold up.
Folds into basically a standard shipping container size, yeah.
Exactly. And the promise is huge. Cheaper manufacturing in a factory, consistent quality, much easier shipping.
And maybe, just maybe, a way to actually help with the housing crisis.
The potential seems massive.
Yeah.
Bringing that factory precision, those economies of scale, to building homes.
It's definitely compelling. I mean, in theory, you streamline everything, cut down waste, and hopefully bring the price down for buyers.
And Boxable has generated a lot of buzz. They talk about a wait list of over 150,000 customers, millions in deposits taken.
Huge numbers.
But this is where it gets a little tricky. One of the sources we looked at, a creator known as Meet Kevin, he tried to actually order one, get a firm delivery date, a locked-in price.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the answers were pretty vague. You know, citing scaling challenges, inflation making it impossible to guarantee a price.
Mm.
So if you're one of those 150,000 people who put down money, that lack of clarity, well, it raises some eyebrows, doesn't it?
It really does. It suggests maybe a gap between that claim demand and what they can actually produce right now. You know, if customers can't get straight answers on timelines or cost, it points to some potential operational or scaling uncertainties.
And that uncertainty seems to feed into some pretty serious allegations that came up in those same Meet Kevin videos.
Yeah.
Specifically around, like, the legality and permitting of these casitas.
Right. This is crucial.
Initially, Boxable apparently had RVIA certification,
which is typically for recreational vehicles, RVs,
right,
not permanent homes.
Exactly. So the question is that enough to legally live in one full time? And then, reportedly, that certification got revoked.
Oof. Okay. That adds another layer of complexity.
Plus, there were claims about stop work orders at a site in Arizona using their units, and even allegations that some units weren't shippable, just piling up at the factory.
Wow.
The video suggested people should just ask Boxable directly about permits.
Which is fair advice. Housing regulations are incredibly complex. They vary so much state to state, even city to city. If these units struggle to get the right permits for permanent housing,
then it really limits their use, right?
Right.
Relying on an RV classification might be a workaround, but it's not a long-term solution for a house. And if that's gone,
yeah, it throws a lot into question.
Then there's the whole issue around their intellectual property, their patents.
Ah, yes, the tech itself.
Boxable advertises quite prominently online, having over 60 patent filings. They even show these official-looking documents.
Okay.
But allegedly, if you look at their SEC filings, the documents for investors, there's no intellectual property listed as a Boxable asset.
Wait, so who owns the patents?
It's claimed they're owned by a separate company, one belonging to the father of one of the founders.
Mm-hmm.
And this company leases the patents to Boxable for a 1% commission on sales.
Wow. Okay. So if Boxable doesn't actually own its core folding house technology, what does that mean for investors?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Or maybe the $3 billion question, given their valuation.
It's definitely a significant point. For a tech company, essentially, not owning your core IP, that feels like a major vulnerability. It raises questions about control, future costs, and just the basic value proposition if the key asset isn't actually theirs.
And the allegations didn't stop there. There were claims of influencer scams.
Meaning?
Suggesting Boxable paid or reimbursed influencers to promote the casita. One specific video, the Ennis video, was mentioned rumors of an $8,000 reimbursement, maybe even stock options.
Mm-hmm.
And it also came out that Boxable tried to sponsor the Meet Kevin channel itself, the one that ended up doing these critical videos.
Okay, that highlights the need for transparency, right? You need to know if a review is bought and paid for.
Absolutely. It muddies the waters for people trying to get objective information.
Yeah.
Always good to be skeptical of online endorsements and look for independent info. The source videos also mentioned other serious claims, though with fewer specifics. Things like questionable accounting practices, something called executive looting.
Vague but concerning labels.
Yeah. And a lot of skepticism around that $3 billion valuation we mentioned. Plus, reports that key people were leaving the chief legal counsel, structural engineers, general counsel.
High turnover in key roles like that can be a red flag. It might suggest internal issues.
The video creator suggested asking Boxbull why these people left. And yeah, that valuation, $3 billion for a company with a product facing permitting issues, relatively low factory output compared to the number, it makes industry insiders raise an eyebrow.
Right, while the specifics on some of those allegations are thin in our sources, the pattern departures, valuation questions, warrants a closer look. Valuations are often about future potential, sure, but you also have to ground them in current reality, tangible assets, performance.
Interestingly, though, amid all these claims, the Meet Kevin investigation did include a tour of the Boxbull factory, so we got a bit of a look inside.
Oh, okay. What did that show?
Well, details like where they put the water heater, some discussion around the insulation and the structure itself. They use SIPs, structurally insulated panels, with a lumber frame around the edge, but apparently no traditional internal studs.
Okay. SIPs are known technology. Good for insulation. The lack of internal framing is design choice. Maybe raises questions about long-term structure or code compliance in some places compared to, you know, standard stick-built homes.
They also showed the lamination process for the panels, CNC cutting.
Yeah.
It was valuable to see the actual manufacturing, even with all the controversy swirling.
Yeah, it grounds some of the discussion in the physical reality of what they're building.
And to be fair, the Meet Kevin channel also had a separate interview with one of Boxbull's co-founders, giving their side of the story.
Okay, what was their perspective?
They stressed a commitment to transparency, said a lot of info is in their investor relations stuff, confirmed Elon Musk bought one early on via Twitter, and they talked about their bigger vision, not just tiny houses, but a whole building system, stackable, connectable rooms.
That's ambitious. The modular system idea could be game-changing if they pull it off. And comparing themselves to, say, Uber or Airbnb facing early regulatory fights.
Yeah, they made that comparison.
It's a relevant point. Disruptive ideas often clash with existing rules.
A big point in their favor, though, is an investment from D.R. Horton.
The largest home builder in the U.S. That's significant.
Yeah. Apparently, it was a convertible note deal, basically a loan that can become stock later with 10% interest. And D.R. Horton ordered 100 units. This could give Boxbull huge help with supply chains.
Absolutely. That's a major validation from a huge industry player. And it likely gives them access and credibility with suppliers.
Boxbull did admit they had supply chain problems, especially getting the foam for their panels during COVID. But they said suppliers are coming to them now and they plan to vertically integrate more.
Meaning make more stuff in-house.
Right, like laminating their own panels, cutting foam, maybe eventually even making the foam.
Makes sense. Taking control of your supply chain is a smart move, especially after the disruptions everyone saw.
Production-wise, they said they were doing about 2 houses per shift, aiming for 5,000 a year from their 2 buildings once upgrades are done.
Okay, so scaling up.
But they emphasized focusing on perfecting the product first before scaling too fast. Said a next-gen product is already in the works with improvements.
A cautious approach to scaling can be wise in construction. Get it right before you try to build thousands.
They were also upfront that permitting is a major hurdle for wider retail sales. But they point to that huge 160,000 plus wait list as proof of demand.
The demand seems undeniable. The challenge is bridging that gap between interest and actual delivered legal homes.
On R&D, they said it's mostly the founders doing it, and expenses are things like scrapped parts, not huge salaries beyond their normal pay.
Okay.
And they defended the big valuation by talking about the market size, disruption potential, future revenue projections, investor demand, comparing it to EV startups.
Standard arguments for a high growth potential company.
And their long-term plans for a giant Boxzilla factory, maybe an IPO down the line. They think they'll hit profitability faster than typical hardware startups because costs should drop as they get more efficient.
It's an optimistic projection, common for startups seeking funding. Execution is key, obviously.
They also highlighted the shipping advantage folding means standard highway loads, not the wide loads needed for traditional manufactured homes, and mentioned maybe franchising or licensing later.
That shipping point is a real tangible advantage. Saves a lot of hassle and cost.
So Boxbull paints this picture of overcoming challenges, refining the product, big future plans. But the original investigator, Meet Kevin, still emphasized those key concerns. Permitting. Who owns the IP, the accounting, why big clients like SpaceX or the DoD haven't seemed to reorder, influencer transparency, executive pay, the terms of that D.R. Horton loan, and why key staff left.
And those remain valid points for due diligence. Absolutely. It highlights the risks. Boxable has an exciting vision, no doubt. But these questions underline the uncertainties in this new regulated space. Potential buyers and investors need to weigh all that.
Okay, so that's Boxable complex, ambitious, facing scrutiny. Now, let's switch gears to a really different and frankly much more concerning story. Anchored Tiny Homes.
Yeah, based in Fair Oaks, California. And the narrative here from the sources we looked at is, well, it's grim. Hundreds of customers across the country potentially left wondering where their money went.
We're talking about people losing retirement savings, projects half finished or never even started. The emotional impact seems devastating.
It's a stark reminder of the dark side, the potential pitfalls when you're dealing with big investments like housing, especially in newer markets. The reports are deeply troubling.
ABC7 News Bay Area and MoneyWise shared some specific, just heartbreaking stories. Margot Simpson paid $28,000, nothing built, retirement savings gone. Her foster daughter still living with her because the promised ADU, the accessory dwelling unit, just never happened.
Oh, that's awful.
Cage Lucas paid $211,000, left with just a shell of a house. Subcontractors apparently weren't paid either.
Wow.
Jirija Subramania, $32,000 just for designs and permits, nothing to show for it. Ellen Miller, $80,000 prepaid, has what he called a large plywood box in his yard.
Just a box. Unbelievable.
Marija Punova, $109,000 paid. Her ADU is barely studs. And now subcontractors are threatening liens on her property.
So she could lose even more.
And maybe the worst. Steve Sanza, a disabled veteran. Total loss, $315,700. That included $221,000 in unauthorized transfers from his accounts. And no construction ever started.
Unauthorized transfers, that's moving into alleged criminal territory, these stories. They paint a picture of absolute financial ruin and betrayal for these customers. It sounds systemic, not just isolated mistakes.
Anchored Tiny Homes was started in 2019 by the Paulus family, Colton, Austin, and Scott. They claimed, by 2022, nearly $50 million in gross sales.
$50 million. So where did it all go wrong so fast?
According to the CEO, Colton Paulus, the official line was, they grew too fast, took on too much debt, couldn't pay contractors on time.
Okay, rapid growth can cause problems, cash flow issues. But the scale described here seems extreme, suggesting maybe more than just growing pains. Not paying contractors is a death knell in construction.
Well, a former chief operating officer at Anchored offered a different story.
Oh.
He alleged that Colton Paulus misused company money, spent it on his personal podcast, apparently had three staff for it, each making 100 kellers a year.
A podcast. With company money.
Allegedly. And used company subcontractors for his own personal projects. He also claimed Paulus broke California law by demanding huge prepayments for work and materials.
Ah, the down payment rules.
Right. In California, it's illegal for contractors to take more than $1,000 or 10% down, whichever is less. That law is there specifically to protect consumers from situations like this.
These are incredibly serious allegations. Misuse of funds, illegal payment structures, major ethical and legal red flags about how the company was run.
And the alleged financial mess seems to go deeper. They were apparently taking out super high interest loans from hard money lenders.
Like loan sharks, basically.
Pretty much. One example given was a $500,000 loan that required paying back $725,000 in just 9 months.
That interest rate is astronomical.
There were even claims their monthly interest payments hit $800,000 at one point.
$800,000 a month just in interest. That's completely unsustainable. It screams desperation.
So perhaps it's not surprising that all the company officers, Colton, Austin, Scott Paulus, have reportedly filed for personal Chapter 7 bankruptcy.
Wiping the slate clean personally while customers are left with massive losses. That's often how these things end, unfortunately.
There's now a Facebook group, Scammed by Anchored Tiny Homes. Over 60 members last we checked, claiming combined losses around $5.5 million.
And that might be just the tip of the iceberg.
The former CEO estimated maybe 450 customers were left stranded in total. So the real losses could be way, way higher. And the California Contractors State License Board confirmed they are investigating. They found 9 consumer complaints already that showed probable violation.
Okay, so the state regulator is involved. That group's existence and size, plus the official investigation, really underscores the scale and seriousness here.
And another detail that raises questions. Colton Paulus reportedly headed 6 other businesses before Anchored Tiny Homes, all of which failed.
6 failed businesses.
Yet he was publicly claiming Anchored was a $100 million business.
While past failures don't automatically mean current wrongdoing, that history, combined with everything else alleged about Anchored, it certainly doesn't inspire confidence.
And sadly, Anchored doesn't seem to be a completely isolated case. Another source, the Tiny House Experts YouTube channel, they flagged other alleged scams in this space.
Oh, really? Like who?
They mentioned names like Multitasker, Connect Homes California, Holy Ground Tiny Homes Company, Brooks Tiny Homes, and they saw common threads.
What kind of tactics?
Prices that seem way too good to be true. Really high pressure sales. Vague contracts that don't spell things out clearly. Demanding huge upfront payments, way beyond that legal limit. Communication that becomes inconsistent or just stops. Fake-looking websites, suspicious ads on places like Craigslist or Facebook.
That pattern is really disturbing. It suggests some are exploiting the excitement around tiny homes and ADUs. Those tactics are classic red flags for any kind of scam, really.
The Tiny House Experts video gave some really solid advice for avoiding this. Be super wary of those unbelievable prices and pressure tactics. Read every word of the contract. Avoid big down payments if you can. Check contact info, look for reviews, trust your gut if something feels off.
All crucial steps. Do your homework.
And if you do think you've been scammed, they recommended reporting it immediately to your state attorney general, the Better Business Bureau, local consumer agencies. Get legal help. And maybe speak out publicly.
Absolutely. Reporting is vital to trigger investigations and potentially stop them from harming others. And sharing your story, while difficult, can raise awareness.
So when you put Boxable and Anchor Tiny Homes side by side, it's such a stark contrast, isn't it?
Completely different trajectories. Boxable is aiming for massive disruptive innovation, but they're hitting real challenges, facing tough questions and scrutiny. It's high risk. Higher reward, maybe.
While Anchored Homes is facing allegations of just outright fraud, leaving financial devastation in its wake.
Exactly. It shows the spectrum within these emerging industries. You have ambitious ventures navigating real obstacles, and then you have situations that look more like deliberate deception. You have to be able to tell the difference.
And both stories just scream the need for due diligence, right?
Mm.
Whether you're thinking of buying or investing, right. You have to look past the flashy website or the exciting concept.
You absolutely do. Dig into the company's finances, their track record. Check for complaints. Understand the regulations they're operating under. Don't let the appeal of something new and potentially cheaper blind you to the risks.
Because at the end of the day, transparency, realistic promises, basic ethical business practices, that's what builds trust, especially when you're talking about something as fundamental as someone's home.
Precisely. Trust is the bedrock. Sustainable innovation, the kind that actually helps people, has to be built on integrity. These stories are powerful lessons in what happens when that integrity is there versus when it's allegedly completely absent.
So for everyone listening, as you look at these new housing ideas, just remember, be an informed consumer. Especially with big decisions like this, don't just rely on the marketing. Ask the hard questions. Demand clear answers.
And maybe the biggest takeaway, approach company claims critically. Look beyond the promises. What are the real challenges? What could go wrong? A healthy dose of skepticism backed up by solid research is honestly your best protection.
So here's a final thought to leave you with. Looking at these two very different journeys, Boxable's controversial push for innovation, Anchored's alleged trail of broken dreams, what does this tell us about the future of innovative housing? And maybe more importantly, what safeguards do we need to protect people as this whole sector continues to evolve? What questions are still out there for you? Lots to think about. Keep researching. Share what you find. Stay informed. Thanks for taking the deep dive with us.